Welcome to The Mental Breakdown, where we tackle all issues related to mental health, mental illness, parenting, schooling, relationships, and everything in between. While Drs. Bernie and Richard will provide the most up-to-date ideas and perspectives, the information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for medical care. Our goal here at The Mental Breakdown is to provide you with information to help you make your life the best it can be. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bernie and Dr. Richard. Welcome to episode 18 of The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
And Richard, we have with us our guest again this week, Andrew. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Andrew, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And it's great to have you here because some of the stuff we're going to talk about today, we are really excited to hear your insight from because of the of being in school, so being in college, and love to hear how some of the things that are happening in schools and with families and stuff, how it relates to what you're learning in college. And so really glad that you made it with us again today, even though we're recording a little bit earlier than usual.
Yes, we are. Yeah, much earlier than usual.
Yeah. So, but thank you for making the trip and getting here to record with us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Great. So, on the sporting front, not a lot. It's sad.
There is a lot.
The U.S. was knocked out of the Gold Cup by Jamaica.
Yeah, I want an explanation of that one.
Yeah, they're really concerned now if Klinsmann is going to keep his job as the head coach. So that's concerning.
I was shocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My beloved Chelsea Blues lost to the New York Red Bulls in a preseason match. But that's okay. That's okay. We lost our first preseason match last year and still went and won the league. So that's right. Okay.
Hope springs eternal.
My Orlando City Soccer lost in the U.S. Open Cup. It was a bad week for a lot of the teams that I follow.
Sad days in Soccerville.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's okay because there will be more games to come. So, there's your weekly sports update. Well, we should say weekly soccer update. We don't really talk about other sports.
We should have a commercial break for razor blades now or something.
That's right.
Okay.
We could call it, it could be the Wilkinson's razor blades.
Hey,
there we go. Anyways, let's get to stuff that's a little bit more serious and probably the reasons that people are listening to us.
Speaking of ADHD.
So, we've talked about ADHD for several weeks now. Mm-hmm. And it is a topic that deserves that much attention, I think, because it is often misunderstood. It's, though very commonly talked about. I think it's really important that we spend this time talking about it and making sure that people understand it in as much detail as possible, because mm-hmm. what we typically think of as ADHD is really just the surface. And that's what we're really going to get into today. Over the past week, Dr. Richard and I, we see a lot of patients, and we've had the opportunity, of course, because of the prevalence of ADHD, we have the opportunity to talk to parents and students who suffer from ADHD, and we continue to notice recurring themes that come up in conversations and things that we refer to when we're talking to these patients. And so we thought that we would spend some time today talking about them just to help clarify things a little bit better for people and make sure everyone, again, understands that ADHD is a little bit more complex than just hyperactivity and impulsivity. Right?
It is. Yep. So that's the common view. When people typically think of ADHD, they think of hyperactivity or they think of inattention. But they frequently say, well, my child doesn't have ADHD, she has ADD, because we tend to think of these two types of ADHD.
Right.
But it's far more complex than that, and that's what we want to talk about, get into this morning, is the complexity of this disorder.
Right, right. When we teach, as we've said before, Dr. Richard and I both teach at the undergraduate and graduate levels at several colleges and universities. When we teach about ADHD, the way that we approach the topic is we first describe ADHD as a neurobiological heterogeneous disorder. And I know that a lot of times when we say those things, our students look back at us like we're speaking in a different language. But what we're trying to communicate is that ADHD is far more complex than just hyperactivity, impulsivity, and inattention. But yet that's what tends to be taught to us in college. You know, and Andrew, this is one of the reasons why we're really excited that you're here, because you are in the midst of your undergraduate degree in psychology. Tell us a little bit about what you're experiencing as far as what they're teaching to you in college about ADHD and what kids with ADHD are experiencing.
All right, well, the things that I've learned about ADHD in college kind of depend on the class. So in abnormal psychology, I learned more about the diagnostic criteria, you know, the symptoms that qualify a person for having the disorder, which tend to be taken from the DSM, Diagnostic Statistical Manual. And so it's kind of talking more about the symptoms and the clinical presentation of someone who has the disorder. However, in other classes, such as I took this past semester behavioral neuroscience, I learned more about the biological origins of ADHD and more about like the neurotransmitter systems that are implicated with an ADHD diagnosis and the more brain-based things related to ADHD. So,
well, that's great. And just to sort of expand on a couple of things that you were talking about there, just to make it clear what I think it is that you're talking about. When you talk about the diagnostic criteria and the clinical presentation, what you tend to be talking about and what professors and clinicians are talking about when they mention those words is they're talking about the behaviors that you see in the person. So when we think about diagnostic criteria and clinical presentations of people with ADHD, we talk about things like fails to give attention to detail, distractibility, inability to sit still, fidgetiness, and those kinds of things. Those are things that we see. And if we sort of think about that iceberg metaphor that we use for so many other things, that's the part of the iceberg that's above the water. That's what we can see. But what you got in your neurobiological course, you're talking about some of those underlying systems that create those symptoms that we see and feed into and cause those symptoms that we see. They're the more biological bases for the disorder. And that's what we want to spend a little bit of time talking about today, is some of those underlying issues and how we need to treat those.
Right. So we go beyond the core symptoms.
Right.
To these other characteristics that we need to be talking about.
Right. Because, okay. Richard, how many patients have you had come in that and the parents say, well, he just needs to attend better.
Right.
He just needs to sit still. Well, right. That's easy to say.
Right. Yeah.
But if the kid could, he probably would.
Right. Right. And we need to treat this disorder as the multifactorial phenomenon that it really is. There are many more aspects to this disorder than attention or hyperactivity.
Right.
And that's what we have to talk about. And I'm glad we're talking about that today. So we're opening up this discussion and broadening the discussion to include those other characteristics.
Right, right. Good. So let's, as we get started with this, let's talk a little bit about, let's just review a couple of things that we've talked about before. We had an entire podcast on medication treatment for ADHD. And we talked in that podcast about how for the majority of people with ADHD, stimulant medications are effective in addressing those symptoms of ADHD that we see.
Mm-hmm.
It addresses the issues of impulsivity and fidgetiness. It addresses many times those symptoms of inattention. But it doesn't address this deficit, the skill deficit that these children have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So while it makes the child look better
and
maybe behave a little bit better in certain settings, it's not giving the children any skills.
That's right. When we talk about medication, we're talking about symptom relief.
Right.
Okay, that's what you're discussing now.
Right.
Is symptomatic relief is what the medication provides. However, there are many other characteristics that we have to address beyond the core symptoms.
Right.
Okay, so when we talk about treatment, we're talking about medication management, but we're also talking about non-medical interventions for these other, that address these other characteristics.
Right. Okay. And if we think about other branches of medicine, that should make sense. Yeah. For example, if a person has an illness that with one of the symptoms being a cough, mm-hmm. well, we can give you cough medicine that right. may treat the cough, but it doesn't manage the underlying disorder or the underlying right. disease. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way with ADHD. We can give right. medication to address the symptoms, but we have to provide some underlying some support for the underlying
right.
deficits.
I think the common cold is a good example. Right. You can get over-the-counter remedies for symptoms, but they don't cure the cold.
Right.
They give you symptomatic relief.
Right.
And it's the same with this disorder, is you can get symptomatic relief, but there are many other underlying things that we have to be treating
right.
and addressing.
Right. And again, we spent a whole podcast talking about those kinds of issues, and then we spent another podcast talking about non-traditional right. Treatment modalities. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important that we think about that the issues that we're going to talk about today are issues that have to be addressed whether the kid is being, or adult, is being treated with medication mm-hmm. or whether they're not being treated with medication. Mm-hmm. Because again, if we think about the medication is just treating the symptoms,
right.
we still have to address the core deficits.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so to talk about what that looks like, we're going to get into some of the things that Andrew was talking about a moment ago, and that is, what are the core deficits of ADHD?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what the core symptoms are, but right. what are the core deficits?
Right.
Andrew, you mentioned neurotransmitters as a problem, and you're absolutely right that a lot of medications work on the neurotransmitter systems. But then we have to get into biological functioning mm-hmm. and how, even if the neurotransmitters are there, the child or the adult may not have the skills necessary mm-hmm. to accommodate for the behaviors that they need to use. And we call those executive functioning skills. That's one of the main classes of symptoms that we think about with ADHD.
Right.
Andrew, do they talk very much about executive functioning skills in your neurobiology class?
We definitely talked a little bit about it. We didn't get into specifics necessarily. We talked about how executive functions are associated with the frontal lobe of your brain and kind of talked a little bit about what the executive functions are, but we didn't go so deep as to talk about how these deficits in executive functions might look in a person with ADHD and how it might affect their behavior and their achievement.
Okay. And I think that that's an example of some of the challenges that Dr. Richard and I experience when we talk to patients about it, and we do different workshops and things like that, because the underlying education, even for people who go to college to study psychology and the cognitive aspect of behaviors and the biological aspect of behaviors, we still have some limits in the way in which we are learning about these things. And certainly most of the parents and people that we talk to don't have that kind of training at all. So now you mentioned the frontal lobe, and I think that one of the things we should mention is that there's a lot that's said about the frontal lobe. And, you know, the frontal lobe is one of those portions of our brain that differentiates humans from other animals. We've kind of talked a little bit about that, I think, in some previous podcasts. But it's also constitutes a large portion of our brain. If you think about the area where the point where your ear, the top of your ear meets your head, from there forward, mm-hmm. that is all your frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a large area of your brain, but it's also in an area that's very vulnerable. As children, what part of our head do we typically hit on things? Our forehead, which has an impact on our frontal lobes, because if we think about the way the brain is structured in our skull, it's sort of suspended in cerebral spinal fluid, and it just kind of floats there. And so when we hit our heads and things like that, our brain moves, and sometimes we'll hit our skull, and Then we get into coup and contra coup types of injuries where our brain is just sort of sloshing around inside our skull a little bit. And so it's very susceptible to injury, and it's very susceptible to damage, especially as we're children and as we're growing up and experience different things in life. So, and again, kind of tying this together, a lot of our executive functioning skills are housed in our frontal lobes, which aren't fully developed until at least our 20s, right? There's some research to suggest even a little bit later, especially for those with ADHD. Our frontal lobes take a little bit of time to develop. And again, that's an area of our brain that makes us human. That's an area of our brain that differentiates us from most other animals.
That's right. The development of the frontal lobes really begins with puberty. They're essentially, we have a frontal lobe prior to puberty, prior to adulthood, but it's not completely developed. But that development begins with puberty, with the rapid appearance of millions of new neurons,
right,
and all the new neurotransmitters that we're going to use as adults.
Right.
But the process really begins at puberty, goes through adolescence, and then is completed typically by your mid to late 20s.
Right.
So by your mid to late 20s, we typically say you have fully functioning frontal lobes, which then manage these executive functions.
Right.
The problem is that children and adults with ADHD, their frontal lobes either mature more slowly or they don't fully function. They don't function normally either,
right,
for some reason. And so you end up with these characteristics that we typically associate with ADHD.
Right, right. Okay. And so if we take, let's talk about some of the executive functions that are important and critical to life in general, not just as it relates to ADHD,
right,
but executive function skills are important with every aspect of life. And, you know, let's sort of really quickly mention the fact that ADHD isn't the only disorder that affects executive function systems. Almost every disorder has some impact on executive function
skills. Well, and it's not the only disorder that affects the executive functions, because there are other disorders that affect the frontal lobes.
Right.
And if frontal lobes are affected, then by definition, the executive functions are affected.
Right.
Right.
And it makes sense, again, given the volume of our brain that's attributed,
right,
to the frontal lobes.
Right.
And the importance of that region of our brain.
Right. In fact, there are two disorders. Schizophrenia,
right,
is a disorder of the frontal lobes.
Right.
Too much of a neurotransmitter. And the other is Parkinson's disease,
right,
which is also a frontal lobe disorder.
Right.
And you might even mention chronic alcoholism when you get into Korsakoff's disease. That's a frontal lobe disease.
Right.
So there are a number of mental disorders that that affect frontal lobe functioning. And in each case, we see these executive functions being affected by the disorder.
Right, mm-hmm, right. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, those are very directly affect the frontal lobe, and then others affect the frontal lobe in indirect ways. Mm-hmm. Depression, you know, lots of people with depression have difficulty with decision making.
Mm-hmm.
People with mania have impulse control problems.
Right.
They have decision making problems. They have self-monitoring problems.
Right.
So a lot of disorders, either directly or indirectly, and that's just sort of the way biology plays jokes on us.
Right.
Because, you know, this very critical, such important part of our brain is also the one that's very susceptible to injury and to damage that can cause problems.
That's right. It's right there in the front. So if you hit your head on something like a windshield or a steering wheel, or you get hit in the head with a baseball, that's typically what gets damaged.
Right.
We tend, as a species, we tend to fall forward.
Right.
And so the frontal lobe is susceptible to injury.
Yeah, and you know, we won't get into all the anatomy, but, you know, the other ironic part of it is that, you know, right inside our skull,
mm-hmm,
right in front of our frontal lobe, it's not this nice, smooth, unassuming area. It's jagged. It's pointy. It's, you know,
the back of your eye sockets are pretty jagged terrain. And,
yeah,
and if anything bumps into those, it's going to get damaged by those eye sockets.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it's a dangerous area.
Okay, so as we think about ADHD, we have the core symptoms that we were talking about before, which are the diagnostic criteria.
Right.
But it's also important that we talk about these associated features, which includes the executive functions that we were talking about, but also includes social skills, it includes motivation, and other things that the core symptoms or the diagnostic symptoms seem to influence.
Right, and that's one of the unfortunate things about this disorder is that many people tend to, as we go around the country talking about ADHD to different groups, both professionals and parents, they tend to think in terms of the core symptoms, the hyperactivity, the impulse control, the inattention. But what you need to remember, what everybody needs to remember, is those core symptoms affect other functions.
Right.
And it's those functions that we want to talk about in this podcast, because people also need to understand that these other functions, what we're calling associated characteristics, are directly affected by the core symptoms.
Right.
So medication treats the core symptoms, but all the other work that we have to do is about these associated characteristics.
Right, okay? Absolutely. And so we've talked a little bit about executive function skills, and a lot of those executive function skills affect things like social skills and motivation. And we spent a lot of time in the last podcast talking about motivation, so if you're interested in that, you can check out episode 17, where we really go into the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And these are major issues for children and people and adults with ADHD. They have a lot of difficulty with motivation. But they also have difficulty with social skills.
Right.
You know, when we think about interactions, and I always feel terribly for those kids that come in with ADHD, because a lot of them have relationship problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the other kids in their class are frustrated with them because they are impulsive and they do things that mm-hmm. affect the entire class, and so the other students get angry with them.
Right. And I think that's a good example of how the core symptom affects the associated characteristic, because what you're saying is that the core symptom is poor impulse control.
Right.
And because kids with ADHD have poor impulse control, they tend to say things that are hurtful to other kids, and that affects their social relationships.
Right.
And so that's a real good example of how the core symptom affects these other characteristics.
Right. And Andrew, my guess would be, because again, I didn't get any of that, would be that they probably didn't talk about that much in the classes that you took that teach you about ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a major issue.
Definitely. Yeah, we didn't dive too much into how ADHD can affect social skills and social interactions. So it's something that a lot of people don't consider.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about that most of the children and teenagers that I've seen who have ADHD experience some level of social interaction difficulties. These are one of the common complaints with kids with ADHD is that when they're invited for sleepovers, they don't get invited back because they're so wild or mm-hmm. they're so impulsive, and so they don't get invited back to sleepovers or to parties because other parents don't want them around because of their activity level.
They're challenging. Okay?
And so they don't get invited to parties. They don't get invited out.
Mm-hmm. Now, and this certainly isn't the case for all kids with ADHD.
True, true.
Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up with ADHD and didn't have as many social problems as I know that a lot of my patients have.
Right.
Certainly there is some variability with that, and part of that has to do with your various activities and you know, certainly there are those kids with ADHD who are nice kids, who are pleasant kids, who are fun. Right.
Funny.
And funny.
Right.
And then there's those kids with ADHD who are not.
Right.
You know, they're irritable. They're, you know,
mm-hmm. you know. They're considered rude. They're considered to be poorly trained, poorly raised. And they don't get invited back.
Right.
You know, they're a nuisance. They're seen as a, you know, they might even break things in somebody else's house because they do tend to break things.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So,
and so that leads to lots of problems for them.
Right.
And again, diagnostically, that's not a symptom that we use to say, this person has ADHD because they have these social problems.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a manifestation,
right.
Reflection of some of those core symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to in our treatment, when we work with patients, one of the things that we do is we provide social skills training.
Right.
We try to help the ADHD child understand how their behaviors affect other people.
Yeah, especially their verbal behaviors,
right.
You know, or including, I shouldn't say especially, including their verbal behaviors, right. Because they tend to say things that they shouldn't say. They tend to say socially inappropriate things.
Right.
If they notice some physical characteristic, instead of inhibiting that, because they have poor impulse control, they tend to say it. Oh, she's fat, or I don't like her hair, or she has ugly this, or I don't like the clothes that you're wearing. And so they tend to say things that most of us are able to, we think about, but we inhibit. They tend to say it.
Right.
And then that gets them into trouble socially.
Absolutely. And then trying to help this student understand, you know, I had a patient not too long ago where he was saying, you know, my friends get mad at me at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why do they get mad at you at school? Well, you know, the teacher said that if everybody
yeah.
does this,
right.
if everybody's doing, you know, stays in their seat,
right.
then we can have extra time at recess.
Right.
And, you know, I got up because I had to sharpen my pencil.
Right. Right.
And, you know, so we try to help the student get some insight
right.
into how that decision, the decision to sharpen your pencil at that particular moment,
right.
had an impact on the rest of the class.
That's right. These kids easily become pariahs in their group because they ruin it for the whole class.
Right.
Their inability to stay seated ruins it for the whole class. And so they become pariahs in the group and again get shunned because of their ADHD.
Right. And so if we use this as an example with the medication,
right.
medication will help the child sit still.
Right.
It may help
right.
him not get up to sharpen his pencil, but it will not teach the child why it's important not to get up and
right.
sharpen your pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why some of the, again, we refer to it as behavioral modification. We
right.
refer to it as behavioral therapy. But what we're really teaching is insight.
Right. And so we have these three associated characteristics. One is the executive functions, and we listed five of those. The other is our social skills deficits. And the third is motivation.
Right.
And motivation is, as we said last week, is a function of achievement.
Right.
And because kids with ADHD frequently underachieve, they frequently lack motivation. You know, why try? I can't make it anyway.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So we have three associated characteristics that when we talk about non-medical interventions, we're talking about treating these associated characteristics. That's what we're focusing on.
Right.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about what we do in treatment for these issues. Let's talk a little bit about how we try to manage those things for people suffering from ADHD and what we try to help them so that, again, whether they're on medication or not, we can help them overcome some of these behaviors so that they have more control over their symptoms. And again, if in the very least we provide them a little bit better insight into how their actions affect others. So one of the things that we do often is we help individuals develop schedules. People with ADHD do very well with schedules and routines. Now, they don't do that intuitively, right? They have to be taught, and oftentimes a schedule has to be imposed upon them. And that's one of the things, you know, parents often want their kids to be in teachers' classes where the teachers are more relaxed and more fun and more impulsive and things like that because it adds to a fun environment. Kids with ADHD actually do better with teachers who are very strict
and more structured. Mm-hmm.
Because they know, you know, at 9:02 we go to specials. At 11:23 we get up and we line up to go to lunch. And so that type of structure, they do very well in the school setting. In those situations and with those kinds of kids, you know, one of the things that we try to do is help the parent understand that, you know, look, he's doing well at school, and this is the type of environment that they have at school. You know, we need to mirror that type of organization and that type of scheduling at home. You know, how can we provide that same type of structure in the home setting that the child does well with at school? You know, we talked before about how there's a little bit of difficulty with that because oftentimes kids with ADHD have parents with ADHD, so it's difficult for them. But that's what a lot of our treatment does. Again, medication doesn't do anything with that. That's something that we have to build in therapy, in behavioral treatment.
That's right. One of the things we know about these kids is they don't have good organizational skills, so those have to be provided by others. And the quickest way to do that is to provide them with a schedule.
Right.
You know, maintain that same schedule every day. People with ADHD aren't going to maintain that schedule, especially children. So it has to be maintained for them by parents and teachers.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's not just, you know, to expand that to another area that we work with, that's not just to say that organization is important as it relates to schedules. You know, oftentimes, you know, one of the fun activities I do with kids with ADHD is I will say, you know, explain to me how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Mm-hmm. And what we find very quickly is that kids that struggle with these kinds of symptoms, their story is all over the place because they have difficulty organizing their thoughts in right. such a way that they can go from, you know, walking into the kitchen mm-hmm. to eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in an organized way that somebody could follow and right. build a sandwich.
Right.
I remember one time talking to a kid, I said, you know, the making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich was too complex. And so I said, tell me how you put your pants on. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, you get your pants and then you put them on. And he couldn't organize the set of behaviors organize that he does every morning.
Right. Right.
To make it. So we have to think of ways to organize their thoughts.
It makes me think of that. Invariably, parents say, I've told her 1,000 times not to do that. Well, he's put his pants on 1,000 times too. But they just don't think of it as discrete steps.
Right.
Their brains just don't work the way. Hey, just put them on.
Right. You know? It's just simple.
That's right. But they don't because their brains deceive them. They don't think in terms of discrete steps.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if we think about this from an academic perspective, you know, when a kid is in fourth grade and has to do FCAT writing, or Florida Writes, whatever we call it.
Right. Yes.
You give this child a prompt like, could Peter Pan be real? That student is going to have no idea where to begin.
Yeah, can you imagine organizing your thoughts to write 4 paragraphs?
Yeah, that's a lot of skill.
If you can't describe putting your pants on, how in the world do you organize your thinking to write 4 coherent paragraphs in a logical sequence?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
In a way that makes sense, that somebody right. can read. And when we read those students' papers, you can tell they have a hard time organizing their thoughts.
They're meandering about.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's much like their conversations when you talk
right.
to them.
Right. They go everywhere.
They're all over the place. Mm-hmm. So struggling with, a lot of people with ADHD struggle with organizational skills.
Right.
And they have to develop strategies mm-hmm. For managing it. That's something that we try to help with. But sometimes students are able to learn on their own as well.
Mm-hmm.
They just learn what works for them.
Organizational behaviors and planning are definitely something that I struggle with. I have ADHD myself, and it's something that can affect people with ADHD in an academic and in a non-academic setting. Mm-hmm. One thing that I notice in school is when I'm taking more credits, and my time is more filled up, it kind of forces me to abide by a more set schedule because I have less free time and I need to accomplish more things in that amount of time. And having that set schedule helps me because I tend to do even better with more credit hours. I get higher grades, at least so far. That's what I've noticed. But having that kind of imposed on me and having to plan ahead of time and or you know not do very well in school, it's kind of helped me to be able to just function better. So
you're saying that actually taking more courses structures your day even more, and the increased structure helps you to perform?
Yeah, personally for me. Wow. It might not be that way for everybody, but that's just something I've noticed. And in a non-academic setting, when I have to do something like I have to get ready for work in the morning, I kind of struggle with with planning and being organized. And sometimes I end up being late because, you know, I'll go into the kitchen to make myself breakfast and make myself a lunch for when I'm at work. And, you know, I go into the kitchen to start doing that, and then I get distracted and I go and start getting dressed for work, and then I interrupt myself there and I start paying attention to my cat and making sure my cat is, you know, I leave him in my room so he doesn't tear up the couches while I'm at work. And so I have to, like, tend to my cat in the morning, and then I realize that I still haven't made myself breakfast or made myself lunch. And so I'm kind of scrambled, especially in the mornings, but that's all related to organization and planning. And sometimes I feel that if I planned a little bit better, I would, you know, finish making myself breakfast and do the steps that equal finishing one whole aspect of my morning, and then move on to the next thing and move on to the next thing instead of interrupting myself in the middle of all of it. So that's just kind of something that I struggle with, and it's something that people with ADHD struggle with.
And Andrew, you're a college student, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I assume you're in your 20s.
Yes.
Okay. And we said earlier in this podcast that the frontal lobes mature by the time you're in your mid to late 20s. But it's a maturational process. And you're saying that at your age, let's say 20, you're still struggling with this. Imagine what a 13-year-old or right. a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old who has even less mature frontal lobes. Imagine their inability to organize and structure their lives.
Right.
And this is what we're struggling with.
Right.
Because you're describing it in your 20s, and you have far more organization and planning than a typical 12 or 13-year-old. Okay, so imagine the challenges that that those kids face.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I like what you were talking about, Andrew, because some of it is what we teach our patients. And in fact, some of the things that you were talking about makes paradoxical sense from the way that we know the brain works, because mm-hmm. the more stimulation you have, which is what the stimulant medications do, the more people with ADHD are able to access some of these frontal lobe functions and right. things like that. So the more you have on your plate, the more classes you take, mm-hmm. as you said, you're able to organize right. yourself more, because you've now stimulated your brain so much that it's like, I really got to get this stuff organized,
right.
and you become more rigid with it. And, you know, I'm trying not to mix all these things up too much, but the other piece that adds into this, at least for you, is motivation.
Right.
You know, you talked last week about your motivation to do well, to have a good GPA, to be able to get into graduate school. That adds another layer of stimulation, of that motivation, that drive mm-hmm. that's going to help you structure yourself with that. Getting ready in the morning is different. There's not a lot of motivation for that, but the motivation is different. And so the stimulation that your brain receives for those behaviors is different than it does for the classes that you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just using that as the example that, you know, this is far more complex than saying, I've told him 100 times to get dressed before he comes out for breakfast,
mm-hmm.
which is what we hear from parents all the time.
That's what we keep hearing.
And, mm-hmm. and it's far more complex than just compliance.
Right. That's right. It's not an issue of obedience or compliance. It's they really don't remember. And they don't keep things in a sequence.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. So another thing that we try to teach our patients, and we talked a little bit about this a few minutes ago, is social skills. And really what we notice, I think, Richard, you mentioned this a moment ago, what we really notice with being the primary problem with social skills is really impulse control.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Saying things, doing things without thinking about the consequences, and mm-hmm. that thereby affecting your relationship with other people.
Right. Right. And we have to talk about mindfulness, because what we want to teach individuals who have ADHD, we want to teach them this relationship between their inability to control their impulses and what they're saying and doing, and how those are related to their social relationships.
Right.
They have to think more carefully about this stuff. Not that that gives them the control, but at least they're mindful of it now.
Right.
And we have to teach that. This doesn't happen naturally in folks with ADHD. You have to teach it directly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's Russ Barkley
right.
that says the primary issue mm-hmm. with ADHD is time.
Right.
He says that mm-hmm. people with ADHD mm-hmm. don't take the time to think about what happens next before mm-hmm. they behave.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you say something, you know, you're in a social situation and somebody says something and you impulsively say, oh, you're so stupid.
Right.
Now, you don't mean it that you're so stupid. You right. mean it that, that, you know, that comment was stupid or...
I consider that comment stupid. Most of us think that but don't say it.
Right.
People with ADHD say it.
Right.
That's the difference.
And you know, it ruins relationships. Right. It has a major impact on various aspects mm-hmm. of life. And,
right.
you know, it's not, again, it's not a volitional, I want to hurt your feelings.
No. Mm-hmm.
It's just I couldn't control myself and said something before I thought about what it would, how it would affect somebody
but
else.
But you can see how these kids can get into problems with bullying.
Right.
Because it could be interpreted as a form of bullying.
Right.
And it's really not. It's really not intended to be.
Right.
But if it gets interpreted that way, these kids can get into trouble.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So we do a lot of work with social skills. And, you know, social skills are often best conducted in groups.
Right.
So that you can actually have teach them practice
other.
Things mm-hmm. and model the behaviors can be modeled and they can see each other using them mm-hmm. in the right way. So we work on organizational skills. We work on social skills. Another thing that we work on behaviorally is self-monitoring.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is a challenging one for us to work on because, you know, as we often say, if you could, you would. If a kid can engage in the appropriate behavior, they would.
Right.
If they're not, then we really have to look at why they can't. And usually, it's because of a self-monitoring problem.
Right.
They don't have the capacity to look at what they're doing now,
mm-hmm.
evaluate it, and determine whether or not it's appropriate.
Right.
You know, it always makes me laugh that one of the primary accommodations in school, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes if we have time, one of the primary accommodations we give for ADHD students in school is more time on tests. Well, that's appropriate for some kids with ADHD, but my experience is a good portion of people with ADHD are the first ones done. And so it's not that they need extra time. What they need instead is encouragement to go back and check your work,
right.
self-monitor.
Self-monitor.
Did you do them appropriately? A lot of kids with ADHD, they turn in incomplete work
mm-hmm.
because they, you know, oh, I didn't think to look at the back of the page.
Right.
You know, so
didn't know there was a second page.
Right. Yeah. They mm-hmm. miss entire portions of right. the assignment because they weren't attending to mm-hmm. the details. Mm-hmm. They don't need more time. They just need better self-monitoring skills.
Right.
So we really work hard with patients to help them with self-monitoring so that they can develop a capacity to look at what they're doing, evaluate what they're doing, and make sure that they're staying in line.
That's right.
There's some neat systems that they have in place that, you know, can be disruptive for other students, but, you know, they have this this system in place where periodically the student with ADHD will have something on their desk that'll make a little beep,
mm-hmm.
and the student is trained that when they hear the beep, think about what you're doing, evaluate what's happening, and make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right, right. Yeah, there are more and more of those devices coming out now
yeah.
to serve as prompts to say, are you thinking about it? Have you, you know, make sure you've thought about each step.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are you paying attention?
Are you paying attention right now?
And again, that's something that kids with ADHD don't intuitively
do. Mm-hmm.
They get distracted by things and all of a sudden 5 minutes have passed and they're, you know, examining their pencil
right.
or doodling on their paper or something. So we have organization,
so that's self-monitoring, right?
Yes, organization, social skills, self-monitoring, and we have to teach planning skills. Planning right. oftentimes goes along with
organization.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we have to teach them how to plan out things, and this kind of goes back to Andrew's morning routine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, planning out your schedule and helping them understand that these are the steps that we take to accomplish a task.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we were talking about the examples earlier with putting your pants on and making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. If we want a student to be able to start at A and end with C, we have to teach them all the steps in between. And so a lot of times that's really direct instruction, and we have to teach them in very specific situations for that.
That's right. One of the things we know about folks with ADHD is they're not good at, number one, anticipating consequences or planning for the future. They don't look into the future very well.
Right.
Thinking in terms of, well, this project is due on Friday and today is Monday, and so I need to do these steps, again, back to steps, to get from Monday to Friday so I get this project finished. Very, very difficult time. It's a challenging thing for them to make a plan to get something finished.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that oftentimes is a manifestation of time again.
Time.
I have a kid with ADHD that I work with who loves video games, go figure. Right. Loves video games, and he will literally sit there and play video games for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And have no concept of the amount of time that's passed.
Of the elapsed time.
Right.
Right.
We sat down not too long ago and did our, what is it, the 160 hours.
168 hours
168
in a week.
Hours of the week.
Right.
And we went through it, and he was overtime
mm-hmm.
on video games.
Right.
You know, he barely had time to eat.
Right.
And that's because his time with eating and playing video games overlapped.
That's right.
So he was eating while he was playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't understand it until we sat down and said, look at the amount of time
mm-hmm.
you're actually dedicating
right.
to this one activity that right. isn't really accomplishing mm-hmm. the goals that you want to accomplish.
Right.
So time is a major issue for folks with ADHD. And it, right. again, kind of goes back to what Andrew was saying as far as how do you create a schedule
that's
that
right.
keeps you on task and keeps you going with things mm-hmm. you need to do.
And that's why we urge parents to have their children do things in exactly the same order every day.
Every day.
Because left to their own, they're going to get it all out of order and they're not going to get things finished. Whereas if they do the same thing in the same way every day, at least they build that habit. Might
right.
be a mindless habit, but it's still a habit. And they're ready for school on time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when it comes to video games, one of the recommendations we'll make is, you know, I don't have any problems with kids playing video games.
Right.
It's just the quantity.
That's right. If they over, like anything else.
Right. And so we say, video games are fine, but mm-hmm. you play video games from 6 to 7, or
right.
6 to 7:30, or however
mm-hmm.
much time. That's the video game time.
Right.
And then after that, at that time, the video games are turned off,
mm-hmm.
and you go on with other things that you have to do.
Right.
Same thing with homework. Everybody hates homework. But if you say, from 4 to 6,
mm-hmm.
that's that time dedicated to homework.
Right.
No video games during that time. Nothing else happens during that time. Homework is done only.
Right.
And we sit down to decide that based upon how much time it typically takes the student to do
mm-hmm.
their homework. If they get their homework done early and they still have 30 minutes left of that time frame, then that 30 minutes is spent
right.
reading
right.
or studying for a test or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that time can only be used for schoolwork.
Right.
And that helps structure the time for the student.
Have to structure the day. Right.
Mm-hmm. So the final one is kind of goes back to that third associated feature, which is motivation. And one of the things that we work with our patients on is developing competence. They have to get good at what we want them to do. They
mm-hmm.
have to see some benefit for it. And so, again, it relates to the stuff we talked about last week with motivation.
Right. Yeah. And what we have to remember with these kids with ADHD, they do get into trouble for doing things they're not supposed to do or not getting things finished. And so they feel incompetent.
Right.
There are many reasons for them to feel incompetent. And there's another issue that I'd like to talk about here, but I'm not sure we have the time and we may want to save it. How are we doing time-wise?
We have a few more minutes.
That's not going to be enough time. I'm thinking of the 4-to-1 rule you know, that's a whole other issue that how to make kids feel competent. Because if you don't feel competent, you're not going to be motivated.
Right.
And the children with ADHD have lots of reasons to get into trouble. They're,
right.
they're in trouble at school. They're in trouble with siblings. They're in trouble with friends. They're in trouble with parents. And so they feel incompetent. They feel like they can't, and their motivation goes down. Because as we said last week, highly motivated children are children who feel competent.
Right.
And these kids don't feel competent.
Right.
They're always in trouble, in fact. And so they lack motivation. But this is an important topic that I hope we have enough time to talk about.
Yeah.
Because Andrew brought up a good point. What about the high achievers who are having trouble with motivation, you know, because of other kinds of problems? And he raised that issue a little while ago about motivation in high achievers if they have comorbid disorders. You know,
right.
what about the kid with depression or anxiety? Anxiety is another issue. So that's another whole topic I think that we ought to be talking about.
Yeah.
Is motivation.
Absolutely, absolutely. So maybe we'll tie that into some to our next podcast,
right?
Because it's a huge thing that we work with.
Yeah, frequently children who have ADHD, that's not the only thing that they have. That's not the only problem they're struggling with.
Right, right. They're struggling with much more than that.
Right.
All right. So those are some of the things. You know, if you have a child with ADHD or you have ADHD, and you're using medication or you choose not to use medication, these are the kinds of things that you need to be working with someone to help remedy. We need to address these kinds of issues. And again, one of the things that we try to do is not to minimize.
Right.
These are tough things to work on.
They are. Yeah, these are hard things to do.
They're challenging. They require a lot of work. Mm-hmm. They require a lot of structure. You know, here in our practice, we do a lot of parent training. We're working on several groups and workshops and things like that coming up. And I'll mention one workshop here in just a couple minutes. But because of the amount of work that this takes, we dedicate a lot of our work here in this practice on dealing with this.
On dealing, that's right. Because again, the medication addresses core symptoms, but we have these associated characteristics that we have to be addressing.
Right.
So when you hear that, well, somebody has to do these behavioral things, what they're really talking about are this very complex list of what we call associated characteristics. And those have to be worked on as well.
Right.
So it's not just a question of medication. Medication's part of it, but there are all these other issues that need to be addressed.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, again, we encourage you to get out and you know, if you're struggling with any of these things, or if you have a child that's struggling with any of these things,
right,
find somebody that can help you with this. Because, you know, no one wants to be on medication for the rest of their life. And so these are the skills that you can learn or that can be taught to help you so that if you get to a point where you can come off the medication,
right,
then you have the skills and strategies necessary to be successful and to do the things that you need to do to be successful.
That's true. When we talk about coming off medication, which is a goal for many people, is to get off the medication, these are the skills you need to develop in order to make that possible.
Right.
So another way of looking at it is, this is your ticket to get off medication, is to learn these skills.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of practice. It's a lot of hard work.
So it's hard work on the part of the family.
Mm-hmm. But it's definitely doable.
Right.
Well, we had some other things we were going to talk about today too, but we're getting close to our hour mark. Wanted to talk about, you know, how all this stuff relates to school.
We haven't even talked about that.
We didn't even talk about that. So we need to think about what we're going to, how we can bring that in, because, you know, what we're seeing in the schools today suggests that it's more and more difficult to get some of the services that you need in school.
Right. As the number of children increase, as we get into 6%, 8%, 10%, 12% with the diagnosis, schools just don't have the resources to provide accommodations for that many children. And
so tightening the reins.
Right. So they're making the school districts are tightening the criteria. Testing agencies are tightening the criteria. If you take the SAT or the GRE, and professional tests for licensure, they're all tightening the criteria. And this is really an important issue that parents need to be aware of,
right,
that the diagnosis of ADHD doesn't automatically get accommodations as it did even 4 or 5 years ago.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's something we should probably talk about.
Yeah. So if you have any questions about ADHD, if there's any, or anything else, if you have any comments about anything that you heard in the podcast today, we would love for you to write to us on our blog at thementalbreakdown.com or on Facebook, which is, of course, facebook.com/thementalbreakdown, or you can tweet us at Dr. Bernie. We have we're recording this on July 24th,
right,
and within the next couple of weeks, on August 7th,
right,
which is Friday morning, we are planning a workshop here in, for those of you who are local, we're here in Polk County, Florida. We're offering a workshop that addresses issues related to ADHD, and it's going to be designed for parents and teachers working with kids with ADHD to help us develop a plan for the start of the school year. So that's going to be August 7th. If you want more information from that, you can go to the blog or you can go to our practice website, which is www.pacflorida.com, and click the workshops tab, and you can find the information there about this workshop. Space is kind of limited, so if you're interested, I would encourage you to register soon to make sure that you get a space.
Right, looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're hoping to offer a lot more, and we're actually hoping to do a little bit of traveling and get around to different parts of the country and do some more of these talks and workshops for people, because we feel that this is information that people really need. We'd also love it if you would jump on iTunes and write a review. Reviews are great ways to help other people find out about us and be able to come in and listen to the podcast and share with us their experiences so that we all might learn and make things a little bit better for everybody. So if you could write a review, that'd be great. Again, write to us on Facebook or on the blog so that we can have more ideas about future podcasts and other topics that are interesting and important to you so that we can cover them. Anything else?
That's it for today.
All right. So until next time, thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Burning.
I'm Dr. Richard.
And I'm Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for being here, Andrew.
Have a great week, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Mental Breakdown. If you want more information, you can check out our website at www.pacflorida.com. The Mental Breakdown is sponsored in part by theledger.com, where you can read our weekly column in the live section. Our podcasts are available for download on iTunes, and you can follow us on our YouTube channel and Facebook. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us messages either through our website or on Facebook. You can send us questions or topics you would like for us to address on future podcasts. Drs. Bernie and Richard are available for workshops, so you can contact us for more information. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay mentally healthy.